Hi there, and welcome to Vroom, your motorsport fix with me, Michael Hill.
Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Vroom podcast. In a few moments' time, we'll be talking to our only guest of the week, a certain rising star in the British GP2 Championship. And then we'll also be having an update and a summary from the opening rounds of World Superbike and of the Formula One World Championship, plus a look ahead to the opening round of MotoGP this weekend from Catherine. That's all to come on the Vroom podcast, so stay with us. My first guest this week on the Vroom podcast is a young teenager that was definitely making a name for himself in BSB last year. Third overall in the GP2 Championship, Luca Allen joins me now. And Luca, how are you, mate? Thanks for joining us.
Yes, all right. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. A little bit tired. People, I think, just assume that I just get on a stage and waffle on. And I mean, I do generally get on a stage and waffle on, but there's a lot of work behind the scenes. And obviously, flying out to Australia in about 10 days for World Superbike, there's a lot going on. But we couldn't really fly off to Australia without getting you on the show. I know we spoke or tried to speak to you last year and just never got around to getting you on the show. So we're glad that we've managed to get you in before 2024 gets underway. And I guess we've got a lot to talk about, haven't we? I know. For a lot of listeners, one of the big things they like about the show is hearing and sort of hearing from new faces and learning about riders that they're maybe not too familiar with. So over the next sort of half an hour or so, we're going to chat about how you got into the sport, what you were racing last year, which I've got to say, well done, by the way. I mean, I think was it 290 points, a couple of podiums, and the first Kalex in the GP2 Championship. And again, for Moto2 followers, that's a big thing, especially in the British Championship when it's slightly different rules to the World Championship. But it's a great achievement last year. And then, of course, we've got to talk about 2024 and all these other things. And I guess we've got to start by saying Barbie or Oppenheimer. This is the big question. Have you seen either of these films?
I've seen neither.
You know what? That's great. We can just move swiftly on then. We don't about whether Barbie or Oppenheimer was better. I got to say, I was actually forced into watching the Barbie movie, and I genuinely was forced. For those people that were attacking me on social media, I did not watch it by choice, and I still have absolutely no idea what the hell I watched. Genuinely, I have no clue what the hell it was. It was the most bizarre movie I think that I've ever seen, and Oppenheimer was great. It was just a bit too long for me. My attention span in a cinema tends to 3 hours is quite long. But yeah, since you never watched either of them, we can not bother with all that crap.
Just move
on and talk about bikes, I guess. But let's talk about last year then, first of all, if we can, because as I said, GP2 Championship, it's a championship that runs within Supersport alongside British Superbikes. It's a great championship, a great initiative. And obviously for you, just being a teenager, gives you a great opportunity to race with such a massive audience. I mean, BSB is such a well-attended championship.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting year, definitely. I mean, so the year before, I didn't ride at all in 22 because I snapped my ACL, MCL, lateral and meniscus ligaments. In an off at flat tracking of all things.
Oh, wow.
out in Texas at Collins, and yeah, just kind of just didn't really go well. So I went for the surgery, and then it wasn't till after the surgery they turned around and went, right, this is going to need about a year and a half. And I was like, sorry. So then we took the year off in 22 when I was supposed to be doing stock six, and then towards the end of 22, we come to find out these Kalexes were for sale. And he was like, oh, great, we'll do that. At this point, I'm still not fit to ride. Like my knee was like a watermelon for months after the surgery. And I was still hobbling when we went to go look at the bike. And then I couldn't ride it until I think it was like 2 months after we got it. Because it's just still, I could still hardly bend my knee or anything. Then we managed to get, I think it was three tests out in Almeria. And the first test, first session, I pulled the bike back into the pits, and I just said to the guys, I was like, have that back. I was like, I do not like it, because the only other things I'd ridden was like an R3, which is the chassis just like non-stop flexes.
Yeah.
And this bike was so rigid, I was just taken away by it. I was like, I can't ride that.
Yeah, it's a completely different way of riding, isn't it? And I've had that as well, just from talking to riders that have come into the World Supersport Championship from Moto2, Randy Krumenacker, for example, one that springs to mind, Dominic Egerter, more recently. And I guess jumping on a Supersport bike, they're very forgiving, as if we can say that, you know, in terms of you do get a lot of feel, you can feel what the bike's doing, you're a little bit more in control, where with the sort of the rigid prototype chassis, there was very little warning if it's going to go wrong. I mean, you only can, you know, when you take that and then think about MotoGP, just imagining what that must be like. I mean, it's crazy. But I mean, you said that you didn't like it, but I mean, you obviously persevered with it. And I was looking through before we started recording, just looking back at some of the results. I think you scored points in pretty much all of them, in one or two DNFs, but pretty much all of the races. You were regularly fighting for the podium. You got some podiums during the year, and obviously, by 5 points, by the skin of your teeth, managed to get that top three in the championship. And, I mean, that's a hell of an achievement for your first year in the class. I mean, it's you've got to say, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good year, and it was the reason why obviously we persevered so much with it was A, because it was our only option. Now we've gone all the way. We've bought these bikes, and that's it. We're in. With whether it was going to turn out to be a good or bad year, we've spent so much money on these bikes. We need to push through with it. And I was speaking to people like Charlie Nesbitt, and he says riding that bike just takes you on as a rider, because majority of things you ride after that, especially the 600s, he says it will feel, well, easier to ride because they've got so much more give in them, whereas the Kalex just doesn't give. There's no warning when you crash, ever any warning. It was so we persevered with it, and then we kind of got to where we got with it, and we found a happy sort of setup that we was going to go to every track with, and built from there with it, really.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. And obviously the team as well, it's kind of certainly in BSB, and again, for a lot of our listeners, we have quite a lot of car listeners, car fan listeners now as well, which is great. And obviously part of this podcast is to sort of bring them into the world of motorcycles as well. Not that there's anything wrong with cars, but come on, guys, bikes, come on. We've got to go with the two wheels. But it's a different world, isn't it, motorcycle racing? And you can spend a lot of money. You can spend a lot of money ride for a team. You can spend a lot of money and do it on your own. And you've kind of gone somewhere in the middle, haven't you, from what I've... I mean, you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but the little bit of research that I've done, it's kind of... It's your bike, if I understand. You own the bike, and then you're kind of partnered with the team owner. And just tell us a little bit about the team setup then, because it's quite a nice dynamic. It's quite a nice story, actually.
Yeah, so it all come about in 2022 when I first started dating Holly. And that's how it first started. I got to know good guys, got to know Fraser, and...
Yeah, so again, just for the people that aren't listening, Holly Jones is a motorcycle racer in the British Championship. Fraser Rogers is a former, he's raced in Grand Prix, he's raced in World Supersport as well, now back in Superbike. So we should just give a bit of context to those that maybe don't know, where we're just dropping Fraser and Holly's name in like everybody knows. We have 40,000 people listening, mate. But that's basically the story. You started dating Holly, who's obviously racing, and actually we need to get Holly on the show as well. So do listen out for that. In the coming weeks, we're going to get Holly on the show as well. Now we're up to speed.
So then got to know Holly's mum and dad, and they'd obviously previously, before Fraser had moved on, ran Fraser, etc. And throughout the year, that's how we got to know these Kalexes were for sale, through Sarah and Ian, Holly's mum and dad. And then we was going around, and we was looking at, once we got the bikes, people that would want to run them, and not really a lot of people wanted to run the Kalexes, which was a bit of a surprise, really. And then there was like, we'll run it. And I was like, all right. So then now what the setup is that Ian kind of like crew chiefs, does the data. Sarah's always there to help out as well. Also helps out with a bit of the data. She's quite good with that and the suspension. And then Fraser obviously helps with on-track stuff as well.
Yeah.
And then this year we've got another mechanic joining, as we had one last year, but due to other commitments, he wasn't able to do this year. So yeah, it's quite a good dynamic when we're at the track. It's definitely not easy goings. Obviously, it's stressful, but I know I'm not massively disappointing anyone. I'm just there and I'm like, right, they'll be all right with me. I know that was a bad session, but they'll be all right.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I should just point out, got the names wrong there. It's actually Holly Harris and it's Chloe Jones that's the other racer. So, in fact, we'll get them both on the show. There we go. This is what happens. It's a live broadcast, so we can always make mistakes. This is what I'm saying. Everybody thinks I'm perfect, and I'm not. I'm far from it. I thought that's not right because Sarah's surname is Harris, and I'm sure I'm messing this up. But let's just keep going. No one will notice. And then I'm like, actually, shit, people are listening and I got it wrong. But yeah, just wanted to correct that. Just in case actually Holly was listening and then suddenly thought you were dating somebody else who was also called Holly. And then I've just created a whole big shitstorm in the middle of a podcast. I mean, dear me, there you go. But just put that out there. Now we've set the record straight. Should we start this again? Bloody hell, mate. And there's me at the beginning telling you not to worry about it. Just go with it. And I'm dropping mistakes left, right and centre. But there you go. There you go. You want to see me doing a commentary, mate? It doesn't get much better than this, to be fair.
No?
No, not at all. So anyway, let's get back to it. What is going on tonight? Honestly, this is why I never normally record podcasts on a Friday night, mate. And this is before I've had a drink as well. Bloody hell.
I am weak, mate.
I know. Unbelievable. Don't give me a beer, mate. Oh, my God. Don't get me started. Anyway, so obviously that takes us up to how the team is running. And I've got to say, that's quite a... It is unique in a way, but it's actually, in some respects, I think actually quite good because you've kind of got the best of both worlds, haven't you? You've got, you know, your own family and then you kind of got sort of extended family, if we can say that, plus the benefits of obviously being associated with a rider like Fraser, who's obviously had a great career and obviously is still doing great things himself. So, I mean, it's kind of a win-win, really.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's good as well because then I kind of get support as well from a lot of Fraser's mates, so obviously people like Brad Jones as well. So it was just kind of cool that, you know, I've got a lot of good people in my corner, really. So it's always nice.
Yeah, you mentioned Brad Jones, and I'm talking about beers, and he'll kill me for saying this. I was obviously at Scott Redding's wedding over in Los Angeles a couple of years ago. Man alive, they can drink, can't they? Bugger me. Like, it was incredible. I've got to say, the wedding was incredible. When you mentioned Brad, and obviously Brad was on the podcast a couple of years ago, obviously before his accident. And how good is it? Good is it to see Brad back up and about and just being the thoroughly brilliant bloke that he is. I mean, I was so pleased when he obviously was able to pull through. And have you actually been out cycling then with Fraser and Brad and Scott?
I think they'd murdered me, to be fair.
I mean, they're fit, aren't they? I mean, I know even, as I say, when we were over in Los Angeles and they were out riding and training, it's like, man, you've got a wedding in a couple of days. No, we're outside. Bloody hell, boys. just have a day off.
They're doing 100 plus miles a day, and I'm like, boys, chill. Yeah,
it's impressive stuff. It is impressive stuff. But as you said, I mean, you can only gain experience from people like that, you know, I mean, that which is incredible. Now, obviously, getting into the sport, obviously, you still are just a teenager. I'm sure you've got a massive career ahead of you. But you obviously came up through the ranks of mini bikes, and you did the I want to call it the Super Team Championship, but it wasn't called that. It was like the Kawasaki Bemzy Championship. Team Green, that's it. Yeah, I couldn't think of the name. Through the Team Green ranks. So just tell us a little bit of how you got into racing then. Do you come from like a racing family or?
No, it was... well, my dad's always had bikes, but only ever like just on the roads and on things like that. And when I was, I think I must have been about six, started begging him for a bike. And he refused for ages. And it got to the point where I used to be really sneaky about it. I'd go on like his work iPad or his phone, and I'd go into his browser and I'd search motocross bikes for kids and leave it open. So he'd come to his phone or his iPad and he'd see it. So I was, I was leaving like subtle hints all the time.
I love and, that. I think that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
And then eventually I got my way with it, and he got me a little CRF70.
Okay.
And just to shut me up, probably, because I only ever rode it around the garden and stuff. And then he took me to our local motocross track, and he realised CRF70 weren't really suitable for it. So it was then a 65 again, just local really on the motocross bikes, and then 85, done a couple races, and then when I was on the 85, of all things, we had a plasterer come around the house. And he was like, oh, I've seen you got bikes. And he was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, you want to get them on this? It's much safer. And what it was the British Mini Bike Championship.
Yeah.
But on mini GPs and pit bikes. And my first year, I'd done on a pit bike 140. On one of these just Chinese pit bikes or whatever they are. And I finished fourth in my first year. And we was like, that's all right. So then, yeah. Done it again next year alongside the Team Green Championship in Bemsey. And I won that mini GP championship. But then I think I was like fifth, Bemsey. I can't remember. It was like fifth or sixth. It was somewhere around there. And then year after that, it was Ninja 400s, then the R3, and then just kind of...
And progressed through. Yeah, that's great. It's funny, isn't it, how many riders are coming through the mini bikes. And again, for the listeners, we were talking just before we started recording, and obviously riding those sort of mini bikes and the mini motos and things. I think a lot of people don't really give enough credit to what riding those bikes do. And obviously, I spend a lot of time in Europe and you know, been quite fortunate to go out to some of these little tracks with riders when they're testing and riding even the ovales, you know, and things like that. But it really does hone your skills, doesn't it? And people think, well, why is a superbike rider, why is a MotoGP rider racing on these little mini bikes at kart tracks? But I mean, yeah. As you were saying yourself, I mean, it shocked you, didn't it?
Yeah, massively. Because Sarah got me onto these mini motos, like the proper tiny little bikes. And she says, you need to get riding these. She says, they'll improve your riding massively. And at first I was kind of like, yeah, okay. And then, but I was just like, whatever, I'll go out. And I started riding them more and more and more, and to the point I was riding them, like, I think every weekend. And then got onto the Calyx again. And I was like, I couldn't believe how much it helped my riding. I got on the Calyx and I was like, no way this has worked. And I was like, no way.
Yeah, no, it is funny. I mean, where did you ride actually, incidentally? There used to be a place... can't think of where it was. I'm sure I went with Fraser once years ago. It was in Swindon. Is that
Swindon Karting?
Swindon Karting, yeah. The indoor place. Yeah. It's a long time since I've been there, but is that still going?
That's since closed down.
Ah. Yeah. I thought I hadn't seen anything about it. I was like, it was a great venue that though, wasn't it? It was so cool.
Yeah. I only ever went once, but it was like, yeah, it was really good. And it closed a couple of years back, I think, just before COVID.
Yeah, and then obviously COVID hasn't helped, has it, with things like that. And I tell you where else is really good to go. And again, this is not an endorsement. I'm not being paid to say this, but Pete Boast has a flat track place up in up near Cadwell Park. And I've been up there a couple of times with a couple of riders that I work with. And that's a great fun night. Indoor, it is. You know, but that's really good. Again, obviously the flat track. And again, loads of Europeans doing flat track, and certainly in America. As well, I mean, flat track is massive over there, isn't it? And dirt track and stuff like that. Yeah. It's huge. I want to talk a little bit about America as well, if we can. I know we've got a little bit of time left, because obviously you're focused right now in the British Championship. And what's the long term goal before I kind of move us across the pond and talk a little bit about America?
I just kind of think, I think every up and coming rider wants to get to World Championship, don't they? I think that's the aspiration for majority of riders, like even the current BSB riders. I think if you ask someone like Brooks or Fraser, they'd be like, where do you want to go? I'm pretty sure they'd all say World Supers at some point. Like, so I think that is the way I want to try and go, but it's a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. It's a challenge. And, you know, I've said it many times in the last couple of years, even on the podcast, even with some of the established stars that we've had on the show. It's like sometimes it's all about just being in the right place at the right time, isn't it? It's sometimes not necessarily even being the fastest. You know, look at the sort of the process that they use in Red Bull Rookies, and things like that, where you know they're looking not necessarily for the finished article. They're looking at someone that's got a bit of talent, that's able to do everything that needs to be done off track, that's presentable. I mean, because as much as it's a sport, it's a business. How much of that do you feel then as a young British rider coming through, where it's kind of, it's not like it was maybe 20 years ago, you know, when I was watching James Whitsome and Fogarty when I was a kid, you know, and it's just like, you would win the British Championship and you'd be pretty much guaranteed a seat in the World Championship. It doesn't really work like that. I mean, after Alex Lowe's won the British Championship, it was quite a number of years before we saw, you know, Taran McKenzie coming over and obviously Bradley Ray coming over. Just because you won the championship, it never really guaranteed it anymore. I mean, do you feel that now as a young rider coming through, that you've got to have so many other things right as well? It's not just the speed.
Yeah, you've got, I think, obviously, the speed's got to be there. The talent's got to be there, but it's... Sure. Things like, it's your social media, it's your marketing, how you come across. So it's like, if you come across arrogant, no one really wants that. And it's just, or how you can talk to different people. And I think there's so many like different factors that you're constantly thinking, am I doing this right? And you're trying to think what you can do all the time, what you can do to try and make yourself more advertisable almost.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's just interesting, just, you know, talking to different riders and just getting your feelings about it. Very quickly, because I know we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I do want to give you a chance to obviously plug your social media so people can follow you and things like that. But I want to talk about America. Obviously, a lot of our listeners are from the States, and obviously they're quite familiar with the work that I do out there as well. You've got a little interesting story that links you to my co-commentator, Roger Hayden, haven't you? Tell us about that.
Yeah, we do. I've got he's my dad's mate, a good friend. He owns Nicky Hayden's World Superbike that he rode at Goodwood, and it's just something we'd like to at some point try and get out to America, and I don't know, do something on, whether that's get press there, we don't know, but it's something that's definitely really quite cool that he said I can ride it. It's
I mean, how cool is that? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, obviously, I was fortunate enough to know Nicky and call him a friend, and what an absolute legend he was. And he always had time for everyone. It's quite nice hearing you talking about, you know, how you've got to be off the track. And I think Nicky was probably one of the riders that I will always remember for having time for everybody. And obviously now working with Roger, his brother. And I know that obviously in the States, Nicky is very, in fact, the whole Hayden family is very, very well thought of. So again, I don't know what strings I can pull to make something happen, but I mean, just from my own personal point of view, to see Nicky's bike being ridden at a Moto America round, for example, I think would be amazing. I mean, let's keep in touch with regards to that. I mean, like I said, it's not my decision, but I know that certainly every year around Nicky's anniversary, there are various things that we do in Moto America and in the States to obviously honor his memory. And why not tie that in with a young up and coming British guy? I think it's a cool story.
It'd be an honour.
it would be insane. I think there'd be quite a few people in tears as well. And again, for the listeners, I know that when we were setting this up, obviously Luca did send me the picture of the bike, and it's still got the 69 on the front. And even now, little goose, the hairs on my arms have gone up a little bit. It was quite like, oh, bloody hell! Like I think you're right. I think it would be. Would be something special. So like I said, I mean, I can't promise to make anything happen, but if I can help in any way to link you with Roger or with Moto America or to see what we can do, I mean, it would be great. Just make sure it's on a weekend that I'm there and not on another championship, because I don't want to miss it if it happens. I want to be there trackside to be the guy to interview you the minute you come off. That would be pretty good. Well, like I said, I mean, we could chat for hours. I mean, like I say all the time, I get paid by the word. And I've got to say, you give me a good run for my money today. I mean, you're not doing bad yourself. Obviously, as we said, you're going to stick in BSB. You're going to continue in the GP2 championship. Obviously, the title is the target. No pressure. You know, that's obviously the plan there. How can obviously people listening that maybe like the story, certainly I'm sure a lot of American fans will be certainly wanting to follow now with that link, obviously with Nicky's bike, but how can people follow you on social media, Luca?
So my Instagram is Luca Allen, all one word, but the two L's in Allen are 11s. And then,
okay. So let's just get this right. So it's again just to spell this as well, because I always get into hot water that we sometimes don't spell it, and people start following people that they shouldn't be following, and it all gets a bit whatever. So just for legal reasons, the Instagram that you should be following is Luca Allen, which is L-U-C-C-A. So there are two C's in Luca. I know it's spelled differently. Don't blame me. Blame his parents. And then following on from Luca, it's A11. E-N, so L-U-C-C-A-A-1-1-E-N. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, I tell you what, I'm not as daft as I look, am I? There you go. We'll take that. So, yeah, that's obviously on your Instagram. Any other ways that they can follow you on Facebook, that kind of stuff?
Facebook, I'm just Luca Allen. That's it. Nice and easy.
Not just Luca Allen, mate. The one and only. I mean, come on, you're doing yourself.
As a Formula 3 driver, apparently.
Do you know what? Actually, there is. When I was doing some research before this, there is actually a racing driver. And I actually didn't realise for about 10 minutes when I clicked on it, I was reading all of his backstory. And I'm thinking, wow, he's raced in South America and he's done something in Asia. I'm thinking, God, this kid's pretty impressive. And then when I clicked further down, there was a picture of like an F3 car. I was like, oh, that's actually the wrong Luca Allen. But yeah, there you go. Did you actually know, just very quickly, I mean, this is... Again, my producer's going to tell me off because we're going over the limit, but you know what? Fire me. I don't care. Did you actually know that there's a Michael Hill that races flat track in America? And when I was at Daytona last year, I got a selfie with him.
You've got a selfie with Michael Hill?
and I actually posted it, me with Michael Hill. I would have said it was like looking in the mirror, but he was about 20 years younger than me and actually had hair. So it wasn't really like looking in the mirror. And even when I had hair, I didn't have hair like that. I mean, it was a Barnet to be proud of. To be fair,
it was all right.
It was good. But yeah, just another little useless little fact. I mean, you never know what questions you might get asked in the pub quiz.
No.
You know, but yeah, so there you go. I always find it quite interesting though when you start looking at different people's names and you're like, oh, there's a Michael Hill and he races bikes and I present bikes. No, there's a Luca Allen, he races bikes, and there's actually a Luca Allen that drives cars and races cars. I mean, it's, you know, the world's a big place, eh?
Couldn't make it up.
You couldn't make it up, could you? Absolutely not. I could just hear my producer now when he's editing this going, why the hell you've gone over? Now we've got a good ad break, so I've got to change the music. Like, Gareth's going to be absolutely having a kitten. He's going to be going crazy. So it's a shame, really, because we've got another guest coming on after this, so he's going to be well screwed tonight. But anyway, Luca, it has been a pleasure talking to you, young man. Great interview. As I said, well done on last year, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you can do on track in 2024. So have a good season, mate, and keep it shiny side up.
I'll try my best. Thank you.
Here at Vroom, we want to hear from you, our listeners. So whether you've got a burning motorsport question, or if you've got a favourite rider that you'd like us to try to reach out and arrange an interview with, please, please, please get in touch. You can contact me through my Twitter account at @mhillofficial. So what are you waiting for? Get in touch today.
Welcome back to the Vroom podcast. Now, I'm not the voice that you were necessarily expecting. My name is Catherine Dick, and if you missed the last episode with our new announcement about all of our new and exciting things coming up, please go and listen to that. It is a very good episode, if I do say so myself, but I was on it, so don't take my word for it and do go have a listen. But let's just get straight into it. For this part of this podcast episode, this first maybe 10-15 minutes, I'm just going to talk you through everything that's going on in the motorsport world this week. Well, the past 2 weeks, actually, because it's been 2 weeks since World Superbike opened in Phillip Island. And then we're going to have a little bit of a preview of this weekend, because MotoGP is coming back to Qatar for the opening round. Formula One is at Jeddah, and IndyCar is coming back at St. Petersburg. So lots and lots to talk about, lots of stuff that has happened previously, which are quite big stories, which are important. So let's just get straight into it. So first off, we have to start with the very start of the season, which was World Superbikes at Phillip Island. To start with, there were mixed conditions. There had to be mandatory pit stops because of the tyre degradation on the new paving of the track. There were lots of birds, which is what we tend to see at Phillip Island. You can't necessarily go to Phillip Island and then not see the birds. There was an oil spill on Sunday because in the Australian World Superbikes, there was I'm not exactly sure what happened there. I think an engine blew and left oil on the track. So they had to delay the all of the action after the superbike sprint race by about 2 hours. But first, let's start at the very top story, which I think is one of the biggest ones of the weekend, is that the fact that the reigning world champion of supersport came into the first weekend and was on pole position to start with and smashed the record. And then also on the Saturday in race one, he went on to win his first ever debut World Superbike race, which is the first time a rookie has done that on his debut since Ben Spies in 15 years. So obviously a massive, massive story, a really good ride and a brilliant weekend for him in particular. And then you sort of, moving on to another headline this weekend, there was Andrea Iannone, which he has been out of competitive racing for 4 years. So I'm not sure what anyone really expected of him coming back. Obviously, he's a MotoGP race winner, but doesn't necessarily, like, you never know for certain exactly what is going to happen. But no, he looked fast and fierce, and he was right up there and obviously got podiums. So it was a good weekend for him, and it's very evident for that. And then when you think about World Superbikes, you obviously think about the Titanic trio, and you think about Toprak, Razgat Lioglio, and Alvaro Bautista, and Jonathan Rea. However, they didn't have such a normal weekend for them, we should say. Toprak, Razgat Lioglio had a better Sunday than he did a Saturday, and the same for Alvaro Bautista, but Alvaro Bautista likes Phillip Island. We've seen him historically do well at Phillip Island, so he ended up winning the race on the second race on the Sunday, so that made sense for him to do that. However, then you think about Jonathan Rea, and it wasn't necessarily a good weekend for him. He's struggling a little bit on the Yamaha, but it'll be interesting to see how that develops this week in the next race weekend. And then going on to touching on Supersport, Yari Mantella won back-to-back races. Good consistency for the start of the season. Adrian Huertas had technical problems on the Saturday, however, which did mean that he had to, he wasn't able to continue as the weekend started. But it still was a good weekend, I'd say, for recovery. But that's for World Superbikes and World Supersport. Moving on to four wheels, Formula One went to Bahrain and Max Verstappen won the opening round by 22 seconds to Checo Perez. Despite the distractions around the Red Bull garage, there are lots of stories coming out around that, but the Red Bull boys did not let it distract them, and they excelled at a track that the Red Bull are known to be strong at. And then in third, Carlos Sainz looked fired up despite not having a seat next season at Ferrari. The biggest move of the transfer window, not even being in football, but it was actually in Formula One, with Lewis Hamilton being announced on transfer deadline day that he's going to Ferrari. McLaren look fast, competitive. Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris look really close to each other. And that's really impressive. And then when you think of, unfortunately, Alpine didn't have such a great weekend and were dead last for the qualifying, and they didn't necessarily make up for a better weekend after, during the race. And then in Formula 2, Zane Maloney, the boy from Barbados, had back-to-back wins. F3, there were Dino Bogdanovic had pole position, but he had problems on the start line, and everybody had unfortunately passed him, which derailed his entire weekend. Arvid Limbald won the sprint race, and Luke Browning won the feature race. But unfortunately for Dino Bogdanovic, he did win. He did get fastest lap in one of the races, but due to the fact that he wasn't inside the top 10, it did mean that it was awarded to someone else. Then moving on to preview this weekend, there's lots of race series starting, which is really, really exciting, with IndyCar coming back to St. Petersburg, MotoGP is starting again in Qatar, and then Formula One is going back to Jeddah. So first up, let's talk about MotoGP. MotoGP are coming back to Qatar to LaSalle International Circuit. Last season, MotoGP didn't have the opening round in Qatar because of the construction to the brilliant new facilities for Formula One and for MotoGP. But in terms of racing, Grazini obviously have quite an emotional connection to the track, and they have won the last two rounds at the track, with Enea Bastianini taking the win in 2022, and then Fabio Di Giannantonio taking the win last November. So if either Marquez brother take the victory, it would be the third successive win in Qatar for Grazini. And Qatar is known to have really good racing. It's under the lights, it's very electric, it's thrilling, it gets the adrenaline pumping for the rest of the season. Since 2019, there have been five different race winners, and in terms of outside of the sport, this news coming out is Frankie Morbidelli is still set to be cleared after his injury at the test in Portimao. And then Pecco Bagnaia has a new contract that sees him through to 2026 with Ducati. And then in Moto2 and Moto3, there's a new tyre manufacturer with Pirelli taking over from Michelin. And this will affect, obviously, lap times, pole records, and it looks like they will tumble quite quickly with the new tyres. So a lot to look forward to in MotoGP, Moto2 and Moto3. Lots of rookies in Moto2 and Moto3. Will be really interesting to see how the first round fares and see what sort of stories come up for that. Now moving on to IndyCar, four wheels first, and then we're first going to talk about IndyCar because they are going back to St. Petersburg. Now it's not the normal opening round of the IndyCar season, but some news away from, well, I suppose it is on the track, but Callum Ilott is replacing David Malukas after David Malukas had an injury in pre-season and had to have surgery. At St. Petersburg, Marcus Ericsson won last year, and he's obviously looking to repeat that. There are lots and lots of stories in IndyCar that are coming up, lots to be excited about and get prepared for the season. And then other four-wheeled series, the Formula One is going to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, which... And the news away from the track in Saudi Arabia is the fact that they have a new race, they're planning on building a new race complex, which is has the final touches to be done. And they're expecting this to replace Jeddah at some point in the near future and potentially host MotoGP and WEC as well, which could be really exciting for them. Carlos Sainz has come out prior to this weekend saying that he thinks Red Bull was more comfortable last weekend because Bahrain is one of the stronger traps of Red Bull themselves. There's the tension between Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda. Bahrain was cooler weather than people were expecting when they went there, so it'll be interesting to see how that fares this weekend, given the fact that Jeddah is more the track temperature will be warmer. And back to the expected heat levels that they were potentially testing for.
A big thank you to Luca Allen for joining us on this week's podcast. Make sure you subscribe on all of the various channels and make sure you join us next time when we'll be talking to more stars from the world of motorsport here on Vroom.
Vroom, your motorsport fix podcast, is produced by Michael Hill and is edited by Gareth Bouch of Vroom Media. Music is by The Rain Dogs, and it's a production of Michael Hill Promotions.